Kel-Tec launched into 2023 this year with a new addition to their lineup of innovative high-performance firearms. The new Kel-Tec P15 has broken the mold. Compact and maximum firepower generally don't go hand in hand. However, the P15 offers both in a uniquely small package. The P15 is an excellent choice for concealed carry. It offers plenty of dependable firepower to secure your world. This striker fire pistol is the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market. At only 14 ounces, 7/8 inches wide, and a 4-inch barrel, you could say mini, but mighty. The double-stack magazine holds 15 plus 1 total capacity. That's standard. All Kel-Tec firearms are made in the USA and come with a lifetime warranty as the original owner with proof of purchase. Sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. The P15 is an excellent choice if you're looking for concealed carry. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C Weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec.
Well, today is, in fact, the day the Lord has made, and these are the times to which he's decided we shall live. My name is Todd Herman. What a pleasure to fill in for Dana. Back east, there are ongoing whistleblower hearings, and I'm watching CNN refer to these guys as so-called whistleblowers, and this has to do with the FBI and the ongoing, they're saying, militarization, weaponizing. It's actually criminalizing of our Department of Justice. That's what it's become. It's criminalizing it. And Dana's show is unique in a lot of ways. One of them is, you'll notice by the guests that are excited to get on her program, that she carries weight in the Beltway. So I want to break one of the third walls of radio, fourth wall, and address a little bit of this morning to some of the people in D.C. Because I think it's important that you guys understand that we see you, and that when we say things that you see things you can't see. And there is a developing theory I have in all this that helps explain why you have Democrats who are absolutely wedded to pretending that Antifa is an idea. We'll talk about that later in the show, and that's related to the criminalization of government hearings. And then you have this insane insistence that there can be nothing wrong with the FBI from the party of defund the police. And I know that they try to say the same things about conservatives. All of a sudden, you want to defund the police. No, the FBI at the top has stopped being the police. And it's this. You remember when the Democrats were telling people who worked in construction and logging, hey, you know what? You can always learn to code. Right? If your jobs are going away, you work in oil, energy development, you can always learn to code. Relax. Just learn to code. When we talk as conservative populists, or in my case, as a Christian conservative populist, and we're talking about dismantling what they want us to call the deep state because it sounds conspiratorial, but what we're really talking about is a criminalized DOJ and a criminalized CDC. When we're saying that, it's very much like in their minds, in their hearts. It's like going to a logging town and saying, you can't do this anymore. And in their heads, and so to address it to DC, guys, do you understand that in your heads you actually think it's your job to control us? Not to govern, not to guide, not to enforce laws, not to write laws. You have adopted in your hearts a belief that you are to control us. And I know it's common parlance to refer to that as a godlike attitude. I wonder if you guys have given thought to that aspect of this need to just defend all of DC from any and all oncomers who come with new ideas. So President Trump has reacted to the Durham report. He said the American public was scammed. Truly, they were, but far worse than that. To know you're lying to what I consider the FISA court, the nation's highest court, because it gets to operate in the dark, in the secret. I consider it a uniquely un-American court. For that reason, I understand the purpose behind it. I just think it's un-American. And they lie to that court with one guy paid a minor penalty for that. So to knowingly lie of something of this consequence is a massive, massive deal that cannot get enough attention. And this goes all the way down, of course, down into the FBI. And so this hearing's going on right now, and Dana's team has been able to get some sounds out of this for us this morning. CNN, in this clip, calls these guys self-proclaimed whistleblowers, but they are certainly not backing down during their testimony. In clip number 9.
back. The chair recognizes the gentlelady from California, Ms. Sanchez.
Mr. Chair, just as a point of order, I understand and we have been made aware from what you stated in your opening statement, as well as in a press conference earlier, that Mr. Allen did meet with you all and might have a testimony that was transcribed. Neither, and I understand that he stated that he did not feel comfortable meeting with the Democrats. He's comfortable being here today in this open forum. We will be questioning him. Will you give us a copy of that testimony that was transcribed of your discussions with him?
That'll be up to Mr. Allen.
But you are in possession of them, aren't you?
Sure are.
So why would you not give them to us?
Mr. Allen's a whistleblower and he didn't want that to happen.
But he's comfortable here in open discussion with us today?
Sure is. And you can ask him questions if you want.
You don't share your information with the minority?
Nope.
The whistle. No,
so you're not sharing information
Whistleblower saw what you did with Mr. Friend and others, the false information you gave the press, so much so that they had to issue corrections.
The whistleblower doesn't decide that. The committee decides it.
And we've decided.
And you've decided that you're not going to share.
Mr. Allen is here. You can ask him questions. And we can talk about the testimony, but right now you're not getting the testimony. Mr. Allen's here to testify.
And you'll give us the testimony when? After he's left or at no point in time? Or when will we have that? That's only for the Republicans. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, the gentlelady did not state a point of order.
The point of order was, will he be giving us the testimony of the witness that is here before us and that you have information of that you are not sharing with the
Democrats? Mr. Chairman, I moved that her...
I was indulging the ranking member. The gentleman from California is right. She's not stated a point of order. The five-minute questioning time.
So the point of order is I would like the testimony. I move that you give us the testimony.
And the testimony's right there. They can ask the guy any questions they'd like. And this game, we watch this too. And those of us who've worked in business or, I guess, in nonprofits or ministry, we have conflict. Do you know that? That we have conflict in our lives and that we actually find ways to solve it when we want to solve it. But they never want to talk about the topic at hand. They want to talk about they want to create an emotional veneer over this. Oh, they're hiding something. No, the witness is there. Ask him questions. No, we want to make this about Jim Jordan. We're watching this as well. And my overall message to the people who listen to Dana's show because of who she is and because of the reach that she has and her analysis, the people in Washington, D.C., I beg you to go read about low-trust societies. I beg you. Because when this nation becomes a low-trust society, and that's how this happens, is people look and go, wait a minute, the FBI can lie? It can be criminal? You can take away people's security clearances as they did with these agents a couple days, a day before they went and testified. It's punishment. You're not supposed to get retribution against whistleblowers. If they can openly break the law, if they can openly have disdain for the law, disdain for balance, disdain for truth, if they can do that, then ordinary people, sane people, look around and say, why am I telling the truth? Why am I doing this? Now, for many of us, it's because, well, God says, thou shalt not lie, and that overrules Congress and low-trust societies, except not everybody takes that view. So in D.C., please understand that you are, in this moment, building a low-trust society. You have FBI agents now saying that leadership concealed evidence on Hillary Clinton's role in the Russia hoax, except we knew it. This has been known for 3 years. Now we have what the kids call the receipts. We've got the emails that they knew this, and you still have people like Pete Strzok. So Strzok is on record saying that that the CIA memo warning Clinton was trying to frame Trump, that he buried that. This is a guy who said about General Flynn, we need to see if we can get him to lie. That's a perjury trap. And you have the FBI, and this is, to me, the biggest indicator that they still do not understand the position with which, or the position they put themselves in the country. They put out a tweet explaining to the American people, here's our response to a probe that shows we knew this was fake information. We merchandised it anyway. We got the ability to spy on Americans based on this. We ruined General Flynn's life, and thank God he's building that back, and God is helping him build it back. And here's a response. The conduct in 2016 and 2017 that Special Counsel Durham examined was the reason the current FBI leadership already implemented dozens of corrective actions, which have blah, 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 blah. On Twitter, which is not the world, it is a small indication of the world, this got destroyed. And there's something on Twitter called a ratio. So when your statement is blown out by people responding to it and deriding it, there's never been, I've never seen a ratio like this of people criticizing the statement far exceeding the people who like it or share it. And it's an indicator to me that the FBI and DOJ simply does not understand you cannot regain respect by using the same techniques that lost that respect. And it is not simply this instance. This is so bothersome and worrisome to me because there are agents, as we speak, there are FBI agents in this country who are, might be listening to this, ready to put their lives at risk, and they've done it multiple times. And the rank and file agents can still be, and largely are, incredible people. But the FBI leadership cannot understand that you cannot regain trust by doing the same thing over and over again when we can go back and look at something as simple as the San Bernardino terrorist attacks. And if you remember that, they went and shot up that party. The FBI didn't even secure the crime zone, the house that they lived in. There's literally video of a reporter, I think from MSNBC, getting in and eating popsicles out of the freezer. There's video of a reporter touching printers and paper, bespoiling a crime scene. And how many decades ago was it? Well, it's not, it's quite a decade ago. Was that? This has to be addressed with real changes. And I just fear that they can't do that because it goes right back to what we talked about at the top of the show. But this is how we make our money. Our job is to tell you what to do. A quick five is next, including an update on the Kerry Lake lawsuits in Arizona. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
It's Todd Herman in for Dana. Don't forget about the newsletter. Visit danalash.com and get that there. And if I could be so bold, you can also go to thetoddhermanshow.com to subscribe to my podcast, which is 2.5 hours of content every weekday. I have a warning for you. The Democrats, in relation to the debt ceiling, are starting to talk about the Constitution of the United States. Anytime the Democrats invoke the Constitution, it's a warning sign because they hate the Constitution, but they want to invoke it. We'll talk about that next segment. Now, though, time for the world famous The Quick Five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Kerry Lake has a lawsuit ongoing in Arizona. She will not give up on the election, and nor should she, in my judgment. What they're alleging, and we'll get into some of this audio this later in the show, is there's simply not enough time to go confirm all these signatures, and she's not behind by very much. Maricopa County had people confirming, you know, doing a signature verification, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands at a time in like 1 to 1.5 seconds. Okay, it sounds reasonable, except for this. You don't see the signature, the known valid signature, side by side with the suspect signature. You have to scroll back and forth. It doesn't appear they had time to do any actual signature verification, and 100% of the signatures came out verified. I think there are big legs to the suit, and Carrie Lake is a strong woman for moving forward on this. Not though. Not the sort of strong woman that could who could go be a spokesperson for Miller Lite. That requires you to say the S words, excrement, over and over and over again, and also to hate fellow females who have what might be referred to as classical beauty. They are now saying, Miller Lite, no, we were joking. That's not the tone that Elizabeth Hutch, the senior director of marketing for Miller Lite, took. She said, this Women's History Month, Miller Lite wanted to recognize that without these women, there would be no beer. To honor this, we wanted to acknowledge the missteps and representation of women in beer, and they go on with the S-word campaign. Now, they didn't mean it as a joke. I think what happens is young women like this have never met tough women like they want to display, so they need to make them up. Look, I live in North Idaho. Plenty of women out here with worm farms, never heard the S-word from them. I'm torn on this. It relates to women and it relates to activists. Some squatters have occupied a $1.8 million former strip club in Portland. Now, I think that so-called sex work is not just a sin, but destroying lives. But then again, these activists are destroying lives. Maybe they're just destroying each other. That's what the left does. Speaking of cities and morals, the Cash App founder who got stabbed, sadly killed in San Francisco, now, allegations are that he was going to wild sex parties with the sister of his alleged killer. It sounds very San Francisco and very tech to me, but I think Kane, you know Kane from the show, I don't think Kane's buying this. Maybe we can get his opinion on it in a little while. The next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has a big goal, you guys. He wants to change the military for the better. And give him props. He's going to make sure that there's fewer stinking white men in the military. I mean, that's a big one. We'll come back on The Dana Show.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download The Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Todd Herman, an honor to fill in for Dana today. Also, don't remember that The Dana Show live 12 to 3 Eastern time right here. You can also get that on the Odyssey app. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank the folks at KSBN AM 1230 in Spokane for letting me use their station and their Dana's affiliate here, and for Scott and Dee for having me on the morning show this morning. Such a nice thing, nice treatment. In D.C. this week, as we're watching the criminalization of government, I do think that's what we should call it. Because words matter, right? There's a reason that God, when he created light, he didn't think it or give a wink. He spoke. He said, let there be light. He values words. Words mean things. And, of course, the left just loves to destroy words, because by destroying words, they destroy thought. And there is a trick that I've been using for myself. And I'm using it in relation to the debt ceiling discussion. And it starts with a very simple question. It's sort of inspired. We'll get to this later in the show, too. Senator Kennedy was questioning the failed CEO of the failed Silicon Valley Bank. And he's the master of asking very simple questions. Did you have a risk management plan? Did you hedge? Just those very simple questions. Like he asked the judicial nominees, what does the Article 2 of the United States Constitution do? Just very simple. Here's a simple question for us, as I want to carry through this theme of maybe talking a bit to the people in the Beltway. Question, do we have a debt ceiling? Honestly, do we have one? I mean, it's a nice idea that we have a ceiling on our debt, but does it exist? Because where I come from, you don't get to continually raise your ceiling. At a point, it hits the roof. And after that, now, if you want to raise your ceiling, now you need to take the roof off the property. And then you need to put in more load-bearing walls and beams and then hike that up. And all of a sudden now you're in. If we were doing that, we would live in a trillion-story house. And I don't know how good a builder you need to be to make sure that a trillion-story building can continue to stand. Because at some point, even as mighty as Earth is, it's going to topple. We don't have a debt ceiling. We have a word that no longer means that. So the figureheads, Biden, and the people who run him, are wanting him to ready the 14th Amendment discussion on this. And this also goes back, I think, to just the value of words. The 14th Amendment stipulates that the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But we also know that, of course, Congress is the body in which spending is originated. They have the checkbook, as we say. Now, is someone somewhere saying this debt is invalid? I've not heard that. I've heard people making the cogent and very clear case that as the debt is structured today, we, in all likelihood, and I know this is a very, very unpopular point of view. I know it is. In all likelihood, we cannot pay this back. Ever. It can't be done. Now, you're talking about an official debt that approaches $300 trillion. And a lot of that is owed to a private corporation called the Federal Reserve, which opens up. And I'm aware, I know that operates that opens up a whole lot of scary phrases. Did you say a private corporation? I did. I just like to call things what they are. And if Biden is going, and there are indications that he's willing now to make a deal, and this has been, of course, so miscast in the media, that it's the Republicans' job to make a deal. Well, the president has been sitting back and wanting them to fold. Kevin McCarthy says he smells the deal. We'll talk about that in a second. But if what's going on at the border is not what the Republicans are willing to hold Biden up over this, it should be this. You secure the border or we don't give you the increase in the so-called debt ceiling because of these factors. I am of the firm belief that on the border, this is an effort to take the country down. I think it's a cloud pivot play. Flood the system. So flood the country with immigrants who expect, and they're right to expect it because they get it right away, our cash, our resources, our support. And as much as we're called to do for the least of these, they're also called to follow our laws, and the people who run our government are called to do that. This is going to be an immediate financial drain on the country, a resource drain. It's directly related to our budget. So this is a consequence of misspending, and you want to spend more. No, we're not going to have this conversation until you get back and actually stop people coming across the border. And this goes back to words. Do we have a border? I mean, there's a line there, but do we actually have a border? Do we have immigration laws? We have suggestions, but a suggestion is not a law. And the what they're trying to push for, and I respect this, is they want some work requirements in this country in order to have people be able to get federal aid. That makes sense to me. And we'll talk about that as well. We'll talk a little bit more about the economy. Because without work requirements, then we have, of course, the open borders now adding even more strain to this country. And this strain is beginning to show with Democrats having to implicitly, they can't say it out loud, but they're implicitly criticizing one another. And I'm so glad that we've got the muscular, stout Mitch McConnell on this to stand. Oh, wait, sorry. No, that's not true. He's in the background because he's kind of open borders. We do have, though, someone speaking out against the open borders. And it might be a bit of a surprise. In fact, in this clip 13, I would suggest to the mayor of New York, you might want to consult your party's use of open borders to take our country down.
It has overwhelmed our system. And 65,000 of people come into the city. Just last a week and a half ago, we had 4,200 in 1 week. In 1 day, we had 900. The numbers are just unbelievable when you think about it. Our goal is to make sure that we have a real decompression strategy at the border and a decompression strategy in the state.
A decompression strategy. So the country is now an airline. It's an airplane. We need to decompress the cabin. What he means is by decompression, we need to move people out of New York. And a decompression strategy to the border, what he means is we need to get more private planes to more effectively secret these people across the country into municipalities where we don't tell them they're coming so that they can drain those resources. This is an economic discussion, and it's worthy of a debt ceiling demand. You stop this. Because if the borders, if it's not on purpose that they're letting people rush through the border, why don't they stop it? Because it can be stopped. So Biden and McCarthy are getting close to this deal, and this makes so-called progressives nervous because they haven't yet gotten everything they want. They're about to learn the consequence of making an election about whether or not you get to be the parent. And there's that. There's also a big deal, as I see it, in the Epstein case, the Jeffrey Epstein case. No. They haven't gotten the client list. That's sacrosanct. That's not coming out. But a big organization is paying a fee. We'll talk about all of that. It's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash on The Dana Show.
Summer is almost here, and Good Ranchers wants to give you what you've been craving, a beautiful, tasty steak for the grill. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. I like how everything comes vacuum-sealed, and it all tastes great. Every cut is sourced from local American farms and is hand-cut, trimmed, and aged to perfection. Good Ranchers is proud to be your trusted source for high-quality, all-American meat. Visit GoodRanchers.com and pick your box. They have ribeye, New York strip, all-natural burgers, and all the delicious chicken you could ever want. Plus, it's all $30 off with my code DANA. This is the perfect time of year to easily change the way you buy meat. Visit GoodRanchers.com and use my code DANA for $30 off of any box. And make this summer one to remember. Remember, with American meat delivered right to your door from GoodRanchers.com. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. Use my code DANA for $30 off at GoodRanchers.com today.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Hey, it's Todd Herman in for a Dana on the Dana Show, and you might sound like that guy to the Simpsons. You might remember me from such films as, you might remember my voice from filling in for Rush Limbaugh for about, well, over 100 times, and you might have heard my podcast. I like to take people a little bit behind the scenes, because guest hosts get to see some things that I don't think other people see. Well, obviously, as a guest host. Number one, and I'm not doing this because Steven is listening and Kane is listening, I want you to know this. That the team behind Dana's show are just absolute pros. And this is not always true in big time radio, big time. Dana's show is entertaining, but it's not entertainment. It's entertaining because of how she does it. But it's not always the case that people who hit the top of the media world are nice. And sometimes the opposite is true. Now, it happens that in conservative media, a lot of people are very nice. But I want you to know the effort that goes into the show, and I hope that means something as a fan of Dana's show, that there is that caring for you and what you want to hear. And there is, in this news, gosh, it's hard to talk about Epstein for me because I spent a lot of time in teen and family, adolescent mental health, and so I've gotten to know girls who are now women, most of them, who were trafficked. One girl for about 6 months, and she was that human being kept in a semi truck or an RV and never knew where she was, and just unspeakable acts of evil. And she was, when I'd known, I haven't seen her for a couple of years, but when I knew her, she had largely recovered, and that can be done. Really, it can. That's not a sentence. It's not a life sentence. It's painful for life. I'm not saying the pain goes away, but it can be managed. Deutsche Bank is the latest to pay a Epstein settlement in the amount of $75 million for their relationship with Epstein. And the allegation is that they knew what he was doing. And this is now, I think it's about $225 million that's been paid out in total by banks. Biggest question, and this is kind of the theme of the hour, is to power brokers in D.C. You know that we know you're not releasing that list because your friends are on it, right? I mean, I just want to be clear. You know we know. And you may not care what we know, but I'll tell you that God sees. He's watched all that. He's watching you as you decide to hide this. and lie at that level. And I pray for you on that. But my prayers are not going to land if you continue to hide this. It's great news that this is getting out. There is a culture being built into the schools. And from the background I just described with you, this unbelievably scary and painful time for our family and meeting all these other families going through scary, painful times. There is an environment being built in so many schools, not all of them. We're really blessed in North Idaho to have, you know, largely really great schools. I live in North Idaho, and I know there's parts around the country where that's true. But there's an environment being built into the schools in many, many states, Washington, Oregon, California, New York, others, where kids are not just the property of the schools, but the property, their souls are the properties of the schools. That's horribly upsetting. This is a teacher from Florida, and she makes clear in this clip here, clip two, she makes clear what far too many teachers have been told about parents.
Yeah, so that's what she's missing and what these parents are missing is they're not in the school system. That just shows me that she's ignorant and has not come and volunteered at all. Because are these conversations, these doors, they're open. These students have one-to-one devices. The amount of things that they're able to pull up that we have to shut down, these conversations, these doors that she's talking about that's telling me I'm stripping her rights as a parent, those rights are gone when your child's in the public school system because there are students talking about these things. It's where they get 90% of their socialization for the day. And we can't shut down every conversation every child has.
Your rights as a parent are gone when the kids are in school. And introduce me, please, to the efforts that any piece of legislation is making anywhere to control what kids say to one another. Find it for me. And it's a red herring. It's a fantasy that it exists. It doesn't. No one is making that effort. The environment, and this is so key to understand, and I beg you to maybe just, I don't know, stick with me in this, to placate me. Because I think people hear this sometimes, and like my age, I'm old enough to be a grandpa. I'm not. But I'm old enough to be. I think sometimes people say, they'll compartmentalize. Well, my kids are out of school, or we homeschool, or we private school, or we've got a good school. And I would just say that your kids, when they grow up, will end up marrying, dating, working for, working with, having to coexist with people raised in this environment. And there are in two, now it's now really three states, there are legitimate laws that allow that woman, the woman you just hear, you just heard her. She now has the force, the same force in the separate country of Washington State, California. They have the same force of law as Child Protective Services, the entity. So Child Protective Services is charged with going and determining when a kid should be taken out of a home. Now, the way this is turned and the environment that this is turned into is this, and I can speak most cogently to the law in Washington State. Any kid from around the country, and Dana's shows, last I checked on 300 stations, any kid from around the country can pop on a Greyhound bus and get to Washington State and go to a Planned Parenthood clinic or go to a school and walk in and mention that they are a boy trapped in a girl's body or that they want to have an abortion. And boom, that lady, now I'm not, she's from Florida, but people like her, teachers like her can seize your child on the spot. No court, no warrant. They're not CPS. And they can put them in residential care. You'll end up paying or they'll cancel your insurance. They'll bill you for it. And if you don't pay, they'll destroy you. And here's how bad this really gets. They don't have to tell you for 72 hours where your kid is. But if they manufacture in their minds a compelling reason, that's the actual phrase, a compelling reason to not tell you at all, they don't have to tell you where your kid is. So you might be thinking, oh, well, then I'll call the police from my state and get them involved. No, you can't. I mean, you can call them. But the law in Washington State is we will not respond to out-of-state warrants or subpoenas. We will not respond to phone calls from state AGs in other states. We will keep these kids hidden and we'll give them wrong sex hormones at the age of 13. And we will give them sexual mutilation surgeries at the age of 13. And again, you'll get billed for this. your insurance company will send you a bill and it will say for services. And you can say, I'm not paying a bill. I don't know what it is. And your insurance company will go, sorry, that's the law in Washington State. We can't tell you, but we can absolutely cancel your insurance if you don't want to pay. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show. We'll come back. Kevin McCarthy smells a deal on the so-called debt ceiling increase.
I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God decided we shall all live, meaning he trusts us in this environment. It's Todd Herman, honored to be in for Dana today. Thank you for that. Big thing for me is speaking language that means things, words that contain meaning and meaning that have been consistent throughout history. Washington, D.C. is not debating a debt ceiling. There isn't one, because there's not a roof, because that's been blown up. So let's dispense with that talk. What they're talking about is how much more they're going to add to a pile of debt that we don't really have the capacity to pay back. And I have a friend of mine who's on my podcast, thetoddhermanshow.com, once a week. And he's a truth-telling finance guy. His name is Zach Abraham, and he runs a company called Bulwark Capital Management. And Zach was the first guy to tell me, to my face, that, oh, no, this will never be paid back. And I was stunned. I was, you know, air sucked from my lungs. Like, well, no, I mean, we'll eventually turn it around. He says, no, Todd, the math doesn't work. And eventually what will happen is they'll wipe the debt out. They'll make it go away. The Fed will, you know, print issue a bunch of digits and say, wow, it's magically gone. We've paid it off. Meaning that the debt they're debating is, in the future, not really a real debt. So what they're really also debating is, at what generational point do they pretend to not default? And what's fascinating about this is, I remember in the day when there were squad members, leftists, who don't make, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I think we've sort of forgotten that her degree is in economics. She's either a really well-packaged product or someone who has forgotten her economics degree. Both could be true, I guess. And there was this talk of, hey, let's just mint a $1 trillion coin, then it's paid off. Let's mint a $2 trillion coin, and it's paid off. And I remember people, you know, very, very reasonably laughing at such a thing. It doesn't pay anything off. And yet the amount of debt that we've incurred makes likely one day that the Fed, through extraordinary accounting measures or something, does just that. So I think it's vital and important for us to understand the degree to which, as they're debating all of this, that they're kind of debating the frosting on a really rotten cake. And they're debating this in the aftermath of the COVID money redistribution scheme, which is the biggest economic crime, I think, in my lifetime. I'm 55. So you had BlackRock and Vanguard saying about 2 years before they started to talk about the COVID flu, it was already existed, but before they started to talk about it, they said, we want you to do a stimulus, a big one, like $3.6 billion or $360 billion one, big one. And COVID came along, or rather they decided to talk about COVID than to scare people with COVID. Boom, boom, you have the invention of these monies, this conjuring of these digits. They're given to the Treasury. Fed conjures the digits, gives them to the Treasury. The Treasury then illegally twice buys corporate bonds, illegally, twice, at that level. And then the amazing trick they pull is these companies who get those conjured digits that we want to say is money, use that to buy real assets. So they go buy storefronts and land from businesses that have been destroyed during the lockdowns. Now they own dirt and houses and buildings that they bought with conjured monies. And here we are talking about a debt ceiling. And still, it's really not a discussion about the debt ceiling. It's about, are we going to continue to not be the generation who ultimately says, we can't pay this off? And Kevin McCarthy is, I feel like Kevin's done a good job in the performance job of being a speaker, you know, going after the media. And I call it Mac Chow because I'm a Beatles fanatic. When the Beatles, the band, were coming together and training, as it were, in Hamburg, the people there, the drunken sailors, would yell, Mac Chow, Mac Chow, Mac Chow. I think he's done a good job on that front, the performative front. But in this cut here, 20, Kevin McCarthy says he smells a deal on this non-existent debt ceiling.
Well, look, we're not there. We haven't agreed to anything yet, but I see the path that we could come to an agreement. And I think we have a structure now, and everybody's working hard. And I mean, we're working two or three times a day, then going back, getting more numbers.
Oh, good. They're going back and getting more numbers. Of what? The work requirement is a big hang-up here, because at the same time as you have Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying, if we don't let all these illegal immigrants walk across the border whenever they like and then let us fly them around the country, we're not going to have people picking lettuce and working in restaurants. Your lettuce is going to rot on the ground. That used to be racism, but when a Democrat says it, of course, it's not, because those are the rules. At the same time as they're saying that, they're saying, oh, we can't have actual work requirements for federal aid. Wait a minute. You just said the lettuce is going to be rotting in the ground. There's not going to be restaurant workers unless we import illegal immigrants. And you don't want federal work requirements. Well, it's actually good to know in clip 15 that some members of the GOP in D.C., they still have the human ability to laugh, especially at the open corruption of the figurehead, who burst into laughter when told Biden would accept.
But he also said, on work requirements, he'd accept not anything of any consequence. Where does that
I don't understand anything that has consequences. This is a senator who voted for work requirements. If he doesn't want to have something that has consequences, he wants to borrow more money from China to pay an able-bodied person who has no dependents, not even to look for a job, not even go to school for 20 hours.
Yeah. And the contradiction to me, sometimes I wonder, now the figurehead Biden's not smart enough to do something at this sort of a PSYOP level, but sometimes I think that showing us the inconsistencies part of a great evil scheme, because we have to sit here spending a lot of energy on, wait, do they know that they're this inconsistent and hypocritical? So I just reject that and just say, well, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the process, it still ends up the same with us in this massive debt. I mentioned Senator Kennedy, and a gift for answering really, really simple questions, asking really simple questions, should be easy to answer. And the debt ceiling is related to a financial, you know, a way that we treat monies in this country. And when a bank, a major bank like Silicon Valley Bank, treats them this way, it is not the old-fashioned failure of banks. Now it is that you've been juicing the economy with our bonds and our bonds forever and ever and ever and ever. So why would it ever stop? So what you hear in this exchange in clip three is you hear Senator Kennedy ask Greg Becker, who is the failed CEO of the failed Silicon Valley Bank, the equivalent of asking us, hey, did you put your baby in a car seat when you went out to hit the highway?
Bank had 55% of its assets invested in government bonds, didn't it?
Roughly, yes.
And the Federal Reserve raised interest rates, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
And the value of your assets went down dramatically, didn't they?
Yes, it did.
Okay. And you didn't have hedges, did you?
Senator, as previously mentioned, the decision around hedges was made by our Asset Liability Committee.
Becker, you were the CEO of the bank. You didn't have hedges, did you?
Senator, there were hedges that were put in place, but I don't recall the details around when they were put in place.
You're the CEO and you had 55% of your assets in government bonds, and you don't know whether you were hedged or not?
Senator, as previously mentioned, I don't have access to my SVB documents, so...
Well, I know that, and I wasn't CEO. You weren't hedged. Now, if you'd bought those hedges, that would have cut into your profits, wouldn't it?
Senator, I don't know the details of the decisions that the team were evaluating.
But if you bought a hedge, the hedge costs money, and it would have decreased your profits, wouldn't it? Do hedges cost money?
Yes, they do.
And so if you bought hedges, you'd have less money, right?
Senator, it depends upon, yes, they would cost money, but it depends upon how the hedge.
And if you'd made less money, that would have affected your bonus, wouldn't it?
Senator, our compensation was predominantly long-term in nature. And so I know there's been lots of discussions about compensation being short-term.
Mr. Becker, you made a really stupid bet that went bad, didn't you?
Senator.
And the taxpayers of America had to pick up the tab for your stupidity, didn't they?
Now, I use this metaphor of, that's the equivalent of asking us, hey, did you put your kid in a car seat when you hit the highway? Like a cop pulling over going, hey, your six-month-old baby's crawling around on the seat in here. What's wrong with you? Did you put your kid in a car seat? And you say to the officer, well, the decision, officer, to put the, that was my, no, did you do this? I know discussions occurred, but my wife's stupid. And your wife says, wait. See, if you take this stuff out of the pretend world of Washington, D.C., and you plot it, you know, plop it right down into real land, then the act and the fraud becomes clear. Really, what the situation was well, we're going to get bailed out. And this isn't real money. Because I guarantee if that had been that man's house, if, God forbid, a small trash fire had begun in his garage or one of his 16 garages, particularly if it's next to one of his classic Jaguars, I guarantee he would have stopped that fire immediately. Because his house is a real thing. But, of course, they're aware that the money they have is not really a real thing. It's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash. We'll come back with the quick five, including, believe it or not, a ban on chocolate milk from some people. Thanks for listening.
When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Hey, it's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash. You can also visit danalash.com and subscribe to her chapter and verse newsletter on Substack. Dana is a great writer, of course. I'm not a terrible writer, but you can get my podcast, which is 2.5 hours of content every weekday, at thetoddhermanshow.com. With that, when I get to transition into something that Dana has entered into the world of media nomenclature forever and ever, it is the Quick Five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
It is magical. Intersectionality is magical. And in this clip here, clip four, you're going to hear five men dressed as women. And miraculously, they agree on something about race.
all white people are racist, period, point blank, end of story. You cannot be white and not racist. It's not possible, because if you are born in this country, in this America, I'm all white American. I don't live in Australia, but they racist too. If you live in Australia, they are nasty. If you are white and you're raised in America, you are raised through TV, through books, through every single thing to have racial bias toward white people and against people of color. White folks do not have to open up their history books and see their people being hanged. In my history books, in school.
I hung.
It's hanged.
Okay.
No, it's hanged.
Wow. You know, it is miraculous how that just aligns itself. Men pretending to be women and then pretending that white men were not hanged. And it's also miraculous that you cannot go to Australia yet know that all white people there are racist. By the way, if everyone's racist, then no one's racist. It's just the way it works. There is a drive to save the kids. Finally, the left and the medical technocrats have realized that the bodies of kids are sacrosanct. And then I've been waiting for this. So joining with Ron DeSantis, some leftists have agreed finally to stop kids from transitioning into obesity. No, they want to ban chocolate milk. But not wrong sex hormones and surgery for kids, because that's vital. There's a convicted sex offender. Remember this guy, Scott Ritter? He's kind of an anti-war zealot. He lives in Russia now, as I understand it. He said he went to prison because of what he believes in. That what he believed in was, I should be able to pretend to have sex or have sex on the online with a 15-year-old kid. Well, he went to prison for it. Given that, it's actually a fact check. The Federalist points out that's true. Montana, in an effort to save the kids, a real one, is the first state to ban TikTok. And what TikTok does to kids' minds is truly, truly poison. So I'm glad to hear that. A 60-foot fall afterwards, a hiker said, I need God to come and rescue me after this fall. 60 feet. It can kill you. So he prayed for angels to come. Angels did not come. They didn't. Boy Scouts did. After that prayer, Boy Scouts came and saved that man's life. It's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash. We'll come back on the attack on the Supreme Court is working.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
Hey, it's Todd Herman in for Dana. And don't forget about the podcast. It took me a while to come around to podcasting, but it is an incredibly, convenient, also sort of intimate way to take in information. And it can't replace live radio. Live radio is just such an important medium, because as I speak, obviously, the words go across the transmitter, but also I believe that there's a human connection that exists. Certainly, I think you feel that when you listen to Dana and her connection to you. And I don't think podcasting can do that, but in terms of taking in information, it's great. So don't forget about our podcast. There is, of course, an effort to delegitimize every institution, sometimes just by making them rotten. Sometimes the effort's not to delegitimize it. They actually think that they're defending it, like in the case of the FBI. We're going to defend ourselves against the insurgent Trump, and we're going to do that by pretending he's a Russian asset, which that will protect our that will protect the FBI by lying, because it's known to work. A massive, massive lie never gets found out, and certainly it's not against God's law. Oh, wait, it's against God's law, and it often does or always does get found out, and that eats away at the legitimacy of the institution you think you're protecting. I'm a big fan of taking things down to human level, beyond an institutional level. We've all had conversations with people and we watch them dissemble into lies, and then the lies get more and more bizarre. And so, wait a minute, when I came home, honey, and you were in bed with that man, again, what was going on? All right, let me start again. All right, okay, I mean, I know what this looks like, but you weren't here when the cookies burned. So can we start back? You've gone too far. Sometimes it's a rhetorical attack on the court or on the institution, in this case, the Supreme Court. And the Associated Press writes it this way. They write, public confidence in the U.S. Supreme Court's at its lowest since 1973. Amidst the decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, confidence in the United States Supreme Court dropped dramatically among those who support access to abortion based on an analysis of GSS data. Okay, fair enough, except not fair. Because this also comes as the left is making an incredibly stout and well-organized, well-funded effort to delegitimize members of the court. They did that with Kavanaugh, who we were told was involved in a gang rape of a woman. Now it's Clarence Thomas, who we're told is unique amongst all justices in that he has rich friends who sometimes choose to pick up the tab. Now, for me, hey, great, put that on, make it a $200 gift they have to disclose. I don't care. There's no level of scrutiny I don't think these people should be under anymore. I think it should all be transparent. I think we should have their emails, all of them, until they say, oh, no, this is national security related or this is a current case. Other than that, we shouldn't have to ask. It's ours. But there is this decrease, and it is working to drop down the respect for the Supreme Court. And it goes as well to narrative creation because, of course, the media has partnered in this. And we'll talk next hour about how there is just this inbreeding in D.C. of the prosecutors going after the Jan 6 case. And his wife is on the board of one of these nonprofit groups that's attacking Clarence Thomas. But it also goes down to the participatory nature of media with leftist activists. When the Supreme Court came along and said, no, in fact, you don't just get to have an abortion wherever you want at the federal level. We're not in this game. We are not going to decree that. We're undecreeing what had been decreed. It had been decreed extra constitutionally. We are going back to where it was. The way the media reported that, of course, was it's a ban. Now there's this. They never went to look at the actual way it was put in place. That is abortion everywhere. It was the invention of a court, therefore it can be an unavention of a court, right? That's how that works. One hand takes, the other hand can take away. So the decrease in the respect for the court has an end game in mind. I mean, you probably know what the end game is. I mean, the end game is to come and say, just as they said about the police, well, the police forces are inexorably broken. We need to defund them. We need to scrap it and remake it from the ground up. The Great Reset, Build Back Better. And in the case of the court, what they hope to do if, God forbid, figurehead Biden is, you know, remains in there and the people running him remain in there, and if they get any more power, what they intend to do is go nuclear and, of course, pack the court. And they've been building the framework for this forever by absolutely, obviously saying, we are only going to choose justices based upon their race. That's how they're going to merchandise this. Well, we don't have enough Asian Latinos and enough left-handed men who think they're women on the court, so it doesn't represent America. We need 50 justices. You know, we have to represent, well, but then there's Puerto Rico as well. Plus, you know, we've adopted Ukraine. Ukraine's a state. So we need a Ukrainian justice. Maybe Zelensky's, you know, brother could come and do that. And they intend to do that, make that move. So that, of course, then the court is forevermore a non-court. So this is a big effort that we need to fight and to stand up against. And at least on this front, McConnell's good. I have a thing about Mitch McConnell. He disgusts me, honestly, because of his complicitness and his corruption. Jim Jordan, this is related. Jim Jordan had, of course, we talked about in the first hour, and this is going on. These hearings are ongoing today. Jim Jordan's talking to something related to the court, maybe adversarial to the court sometimes, the FBI. This is how CNN describes the FBI agents being interviewed today in this committee that Jordan runs. CNN says, three self-described FBI whistleblowers are key to the Republican narrative. The latest escalation of Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan's investigation. So it's not Congress's, it's Jim's. The hearing comes one day after the FBI said it revoked the security clearances of those three agents. Then they get to the meat of this, and this should terrify each and every American. They took away their security clearances because they either attended the January 6, 2021 riot. Okay, so they attended a riot? No, they attended a speech in which a riot broke out with a small group of people, and perhaps as many as 50% of them or 25% of them were feds. So there's that. The article continues. They attended the riot at the U.S. Capitol. Or, and here's the one that should terrify you to your core. You should shiver with fear and scream for help. They espoused alternate theories about the Capitol attack. And one would ask CNN, alternate to whom? What was the official? Oh, I see. Okay, so it's what they said, even though they didn't want to look at exculpatory evidence or on Trump's people, etc. Right. So this as well takes the institution of Congress, and this time selectively attempts to delegitimize it because it's Jim Jordan's charade. Message to people in the Beltway. Guys, you cannot get out of your own way fast enough on this delegitimization of these agencies. And I know that you think you've built a monster you can control. I'm here to tell you, you can't control it. I'm here to tell you, once about 30% of society thinks the country is a country is unsavable, at that point, it's not if, it's when there's a revolution. And that's what Mao proved. You can read that in his writings. Now, I know there's members of you who want that to happen, that you're seeking that. Well, you also don't know where you're going to be in that. There's in Arizona, there's close to, and it might be, it could turn out to be a really revolutionary thing in a positive sense. With the ridiculously loose nature of how ballots are counted in a country that says we have the technology to change the weather, it's just by taxes. We can't figure out how to count balance correctly. Listen to this clip. This is clip 5 from Carrie Lake. It's her lawyer in this lawsuit over signature verification. And as you listen, ask yourself if anyone should actually trust this election system.
As our expert will testify, this isn't a question of not getting it right. It's simply they are not physically capable of reviewing the signature, both from the standpoint of being able to do an assessment with respect to the procedures, but also with respect to the functionality of the computer, when the images, you have to scroll down to check the record signature. You don't see the scrolling down function. What that log data shows, Your Honor, is that over 274,000 ballots were approved at less than 3 seconds each. That includes one signature verifier who approved 100% of the 26,900 signatures that he verified at less than 3 seconds a signature. Maricopa's log file data shows that 11 of these signature verification workers approved 170,000 signatures at a rate of less than between 0 and 2.99 seconds, with a 99.97% approval rating. That's not signature review, Your Honor. Simply flashing a signature on the screen, clicking a button, and moving on is not signature review.
This is going to come back, and this has happened in Nevada. This is a journalist who's done this twice, and he protected himself legally. He did this in a clever way. He asked his listeners to send in their ballot envelope. So he's not signing their ballot, just their envelope. That's obviously sits outside the ballot. He signed those ballot envelopes in signatures he made up. The first election he did this was the election prior to this one. And I think 80% or so got accepted with signatures he made up. This time it was only 50% got accepted. And you think anyone should trust that system? So it's amazing. The institutions that deserve our scrutiny, the left says, no, these are sacrosanct, safest, most secure elections in history. Agencies that are shown to be rotting, they're defending. Gosh, why is that? It's Todd Herman in for Dana Lash on The Dana Show. When we come back, Target says they're going to lose $500 million to organize crime. Do they have a way to make that up with transgenderism?
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
It's Todd Herman in for Dana. Thank you for putting up with a guest host. And remember, there's all sorts of ways to stay in touch with Dana. DanaLash.com. Of course, get her newsletter there. The people at Target are very upset because this culture is costing them a lot of money. CNN says that Target expects to lose almost $500 million from organized shoplifting, and maybe they can make that up by selling girls' bathing suits with pouches in which boys can tuck their penises.
Talking about, you know, we call it shrinkage in the industry, but saying that because of high inflation, organized criminal gangs, very organized criminal gangs across the country have violently been stealing stuff from Target stores and reselling them cheaper on the black market. And that's going to clip their profits by about $500 million. It's one of the biggest drivers of their so-called shrinkage is this idea that organized crime is basically taking the stuff at the retail price off of their store shelves and selling it to consumers who really are looking for lower prices, even lower than Target prices. Those are pretty low prices already because of the inflation story. Inflation.
Because of inflation. How's inflation down there in Florida?
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Yeah, the Florida man, Ron DeSantis, made a bad decision. He signed a bill, or is expected to sign it, that will allow doctors to kill gay people if they come in with a broken leg. Oh, wait, that's not what it said, but that's what the New Republic said was in the bill. It's not. Instead, Ron DeSantis simply banning certain medical procedures, like here in Cut 10.
Movement amongst, I would say, rogue elements of the medical establishment to do things that is basically the mutilation of minors. I mean, they're trying to do sex change operations on minors, giving them things like puberty blockers and doing things that are irreversible to them. And that is not based on science. That is not based on evidence. Here in the United States, you have a very, I would say, ideologically charged small group of folks within medicine that are really pushing these types of procedures on minors. We think that that is wrong. In Florida last year, we took action so that no physician that does those procedures are going to be able to keep their medical license. So that's gone if you do this.
Yeah, terrible decision. This is actually what the New Republic said, is they said a Florida GOP bill would let doctors deny treatment to anyone if they just felt like it. In fact, the first paragraph of the bill says, no, you can't, because of people's characteristics, deny them, particularly emergency treatment. It's specific treatments that aren't treatments. Mutilation is the right word here. And I mentioned Target, and people might have said, wait a minute, did you just do Target? Let me explain where my head is at with this. Target says, hey, we're going to be $500 million short, and CNN pretends that the shoplifting that's causing that's because of inflation. It's not. This has been going on in these Democrat-run cities for a decade. It's just gotten worse in the past 3 years as it's become more organized. So Target's saying, well, we've got to stop this. Well, hey, Target, you're selling in your stores bathing suits, apparently, as I've seen on social media, that have that are tuck friendly, and that means that boys can better able to pretend to be girls because they can tuck their penises into a pouch in the female bathing suit, or men can do this. And how does that connect? Like this: if you have a society where you can decide that this man tucking his penis away in a girl's bathing suit is a girl, a little girl, like Dylan Mulvaney pretends to be a little girl, you then live in a society where someone else can say, that's mine. Wait a minute, that's on our store shelves. Yeah, but it's mine. I identify as you. I identify as the CEO of Target. I identify as the maker of that product. I identify as the person who paid for that product. But everybody knows you didn't. But everybody knows that boys are not girls. The lie of this evil cult of transgenderism is not just a lie. It is the attacking of truth. And Target had better recognize that as they merchandise this mental illness, this sin to kids of departing from God, that they are in fact creating more of a society that will feel entitled to help themselves to whatever they like. Because truth, of course, doesn't exist. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on the Dana Last Show. Today is the day the Lord has made, and these are the times to which God has decided we shall live. And it is Todd Herman, honored to fill in for Dana on The Dana Show. So many ways to keep in touch with her. Make sure that you got the podcast. You know you can listen to the Odyssey, listen to her show on the Odyssey app. As for me, if I sound familiar, I spent, filled in for Rush Limbaugh about 100 times or more. Huge honor. God rest the Maha. And you can get my podcast at thetoddhermanshow.com. I lived for a time in D.C., and a good portion of the team of Radio America, this broadcast, lives back there. And if I get something wrong, Stephen, you got permission to stomp on me if I get something wrong about D.C. and about the culture of D.C. Jim Jordan, I just saw this, is getting hit by reporters because he's having this, what I call, criminalization of government hearings. They're calling it a weaponization. I think it's better to say criminalization, because this is what's happened. They become criminal organizations. So there's three whistleblowers, and they're testifying about their experience at the FBI, the bias, the fact that they do attack conservatives, that it is a political organization. And Jim Jordan's getting hit by reporters because they've learned that one of these agents is paid by a former Donald Trump associate. In D.C., someone is always paid by someone else's associate. It is an inbred pool of people. It is a club so exclusive you have to be a member to join. That's a pretty exclusive club. And I lived there and crashed the party for a couple of years. And everybody knows everybody. And everybody's connected to everybody. And everybody needs everybody. The nastiest secret about D.C. is that Nancy Pelosi needs Mitch McConnell more than she needs air. And Mitch McConnell needs Nancy Pelosi more than he needs fine, fine, fine bourbon. And, well, which is air in that case. They need each other. Because it is their pretend antagonism for one another on which both of them stand. So to have someone who has been ousted from the FBI for calling out what the FBI has been made into, which it's been criminalized, that they find work working for someone who one time was with President Trump, who also crashed the gates, although he was kind of in the party because he'd been a big donor. That's not extraordinary. They want to make it extraordinary. But when it is extraordinary, when it is meaningful, they'll ignore this. You know about the effort to attack Ginni Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife. That went on for a while. They thought they were going to get her and destroy her, and then she'd tell Clarence Thomas to back off, and that didn't happen. And I've met Ginni Thomas and talked to her a few times. She's not going to back off. She happens to also be a very kind woman. Julie Kelly revealed that one of the nonprofits that has organized this campaign against Clarence Thomas, it took in about $100 million. It's a nonprofit, don't you know? $100 million. And the CEO is the wife of the U.S. attorney named Matthew Graves, who prosecutes every January 6th case. But there's no interest in the media saying, wait, is that a conflict? Ginni Thomas tweeted things. She texted things. She had opinions. I'm not familiar with anywhere in the Constitution where it says the wife of a Supreme Court justice or the husband must not have opinions. And if they have them, they must squeeze them into a tight, bitter little ball inside their deepest psyche until they end up being some kind of psychic wound. No, they get to express themselves. But again, when it's convenient, of course, the media turns the spotlight on them. And this inbreeding, as I just mentioned, is so, so on display in this cut number 6 here. And this is the husband of one of the women who is the CEO of this group that's attempting to destroy Clarence Thomas and is also prosecuting people for walking through the Capitol building. And this is Marjorie Taylor Greene going after this particular person in cut number 6.
Abuse your position by maliciously prosecuting at least 1,000 people from January 6th, but you recently announced that you're going to arrest at least 1,000 more. Let me remind everyone the manner in which you go about your January 6th prosecutions. A man named Matthew Perna, who had no criminal record, peacefully entered the Capitol through an open door on January 6th. He stayed inside roughly 20 minutes. He didn't assault anyone, not a police officer, anyone. He didn't damage any property. He fully cooperated with the FBI and eventually pled guilty to all charges. But right before his sentencing, you, Mr. Graves, asked the judge for more time to object to the pre-sentence report, by the way, while you weren't prosecuting many of the crimes in D.C. This was so that you could ask for at least a few more years in prison for the guy that walked around in the Capitol for 20 minutes, not assaulting anyone. And this is what you've done repeatedly, over and over, for those who've pled or have been convicted on January 6th. Well, 2 weeks later, Matthew Perna hung himself in his garage, Mr. Graves. He was 37 years old. On March 9th, 2022, you dropped the case against Matthew Perna because he was dead. The time for weaponizing the Department of Justice needs to come to an end.
The criminalization of it. When you selectively enforce laws, you don't have laws. You have enforcement, but no laws. That means you have feelings, but no words behind them. There's no principles. There's nothing you can turn to. And the dangerousness of this, I think it's sometimes, again, necessary to take this down to a real life level, just a real life level, and such as getting called into the offices of the IRS. Let's say that you've got an accountant and you come in and you're locked and loaded. And well, maybe don't say that, going to the offices of the IRS, but you are prepared. You've got all your tax documents, all your write-offs, all your receipts, everything solid. And you sit down and the IRS agent says, I feel like you're hiding something from me. Therefore, I'm going to seize your house. Wait a minute, I have all the documentation here. Yeah, but I got a feeling. I got a feeling. So we're just going to go ahead and do that. At that point, you have enforcement of what? Of suspicion. That's what criminalization looks like. And this is so perverse in terms of the comparison to the Durham report. Just notice this. With the Durham report, you didn't have people walking through the halls of the Capitol for 20 minutes. You had people knowingly taking lies to the FISA court and saying, this is true, that's perjury, two or three times, using it to spy on Americans, which is another level of lies and another level of evil. And you do all of this, even as the agents who hate Trump admit there's nothing here. But we got to run it to the ground, even though there's nothing here, which turns into we need to make sure we can get General Flynn to lie. So we'll put him in a perjury trap. And perjury traps are so easy. I've done this experiment with callers on radio, putting them into perjury traps. And I've told them in advance, I'm going to put you in a trap. And they don't believe they can get it, that I can do that. But it's easy because people genuinely don't know how easy it is to put someone into those traps. So this goes back to this inbreeding. You have Graves and his wife. You've got the deep state actors like Chris Wray, like Jimmy Comey, who this is their oil town. And when insurgents like Trump come in, he's there to threaten the family business. The family business is, in their minds, their business is controlling you on behalf of big moneyed people. That's their business. It's like in an oil town, if you come and say you can't drill for oil anymore. And this inbreeding is clear in other ways. So there's this guy who wants to be a star, and he's getting it done by saying stupid and irrational things. This is a guy whose major accomplishment in life, his name is Dan Goldman, clip 12 coming up here. And his major accomplishment in life was being born into the Levi Strauss family, and he also pretends Antifa is an idea. And here he is play-acting that the Durham report is a waste of time.
You want to talk about a waste of time and money. The John Durham investigation is an embarrassment, and it should go down as one of the biggest abuses of power and waste of money in the Department of Justice's history.
So getting the emails that prove they knew they were lying to the nation, to the courts, to the media, and using this to purposely try to destroy a man and to affect a presidential election, which is a soft form of coup, that's a waste of time, Dan Goldman says. Dan Goldman also says Antifa doesn't exist. It's just an idea some folks have. So he is, on one hand, defending Antifa, on the other hand, defending the FBI. Is the FBI thrilled to be in the same camp as Antifa? Well, I don't think that the ground level agents are. Debbie Wasserman Schultz in clip 18 says that the whistleblowers aren't really black. I got that wrong. No. She pretends they aren't really whistleblowers.
Mr. Chairman, these individuals have been determined not to be whistleblowers. These are not whistleblowers. They've been determined by the agency not to be whistleblowers. Are you deciding that they're whistleblowers?
Yes, the law decides. Did you not listen to Mr. Levitt's testimony? Did you not read the law? The law decides that they are whistleblowers.
His attorney is asserting that they are whistleblowers. The law has not determined.
The gentlelady from New York has been recognized.
The law has not determined they are whistleblowers. His attorney is just asserting that.
See, again, as we talked about in the first hour, they never want to talk about the thing. They want to talk about the thing above the thing. It's distract, distract, distract. Jim Jordan, in clip 17, he has a warning for other truth tellers in government.
We've talked to over 24 whistleblowers. People have come to us. We've interviewed several of those, and today three of them. Three of those brave whistleblowers and a lawyer who represents them will tell us their story. They will tell us what happened, what they saw, and then what happened to them because they were courageous enough to report it to Congress. And I just want to tell you guys, get ready. Get ready, because these guys are going to come after you.
Well, they went after people in chat groups. Did you know this? The FBI created fake identities for their agents to join groups that were resisting the injection diktats. So, in fact, it's not just their fellow agents they're coming for. It's people who have divergent views. We'll come back on The Dana Show, and you may be worried about AI. Well, it appears cows have developed independent intelligence, and that should terrify everybody. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on The Dana Show.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
It's Todd Herman in for Dana. Let's roll the quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Hey, in the North Carolina, guy was fleeing from cops and ran into a field, and they lost him. They couldn't find him and didn't have dogs at their disposal or drones, but they had cows. And the cows then signaled to the cops where the guy was hiding. And it just occurred to me as I was prepping that story, I was eating beef jerky, and now I fear the cows may find me and end me. A chicken got loose on subway tracks in Mexico City, and they had to halt the subway. Now, that could seem absurd. It's a chicken. But then again, maybe it's a cartel chicken. And it could be a cartel chicken who's part IED or perhaps carrying expensive doses of fentanyl to bring into the United States over our most secure border. Perhaps they had to stop for the chicken in the center of the universe, Washington, D.C., the center of all things, the center of all attention, a city that makes nothing, creates nothing. Simply when it wants more money, it takes more money. Monkeypox is back, and the CDC is warning about potential risk, the resurgence this summer, if only. And this is something we just have to hope happens one day. If only there was a way to prevent getting monkeypox, but alas, there is not. And we learned through this, through the satanic monkeypox coordinator for the CDC. Did I say satanic? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to speak accurately. He is openly satanic. That's his bag. They never once said, hey, maybe don't go out having sex with people you don't know, and maybe that'll help you not get the pox. But that's just me, an old white guy, and you know what that means. Because you don't want to end up like this in Los Angeles. There is this flesh-eating drug. It's called a zombie drug. And it's all around Los Angeles. If you've never seen people under the boot of this, number one, God sees people distributing this, and I don't think he's happy. Number two, these are, in fact, the least of these. And number three, it is literally horrifying. And understand that it does, in fact, eat their flesh. And you can run into people like this in Seattle. You can, and I hate to say this, but you can smell this. This is the scourge of open borders. This is how this stuff is getting in. So it's not just trafficking of humans, it's that. At least we've got this. We've got the Canadian healthcare system. So if things get bad, we can always flee to Canada to go get healthcare. But wait, stop, hold it. Reverse that. Like Willy Wonka, you get it? Wait, stop, reverse that. It's actually Canadians who continue to flee into Washington State to get health care, but only when they really need something. They got a tweaked fingernail. Go get that taken care of up there. But if you got yourself cancer, you head down to the United States that, despite having been Fauciized, still has probably the best healthcare system in the world, but it's being eaten away at. When we come back on the Dana Show, I'm going to read you an article, but I'm going to take the person's name out of it. And I'm going to see if you can identify, by the way this person is described, who they're talking about. Because if anyone can do it, the audience of the Dana Show can. It's Todd Herman in for Dana on the Dana Show.
Abolish the IRS. National reciprocity. She could go on forever, but she's only allowed 3 hours of the day on air to talk to you. Download the Dana Show podcast on your preferred podcast platform to take us with you wherever you go. The Dana Show.
If I might also humbly suggest, visit danalash.com and subscribe to her chapter and verse newsletter on Substack. It's Todd Herman in for Dana. You can get me at thetoddhermanshow.com. So we announced this in the last segment, but people are always tuning into live radio. So let me restate the premise. I'm going to read to you from a piece written about a, and I'm going to give you this hint, a cabinet level secretary. And I will call this cabinet level secretary Dude and change a bit of the aspects of Dude's job so that you cannot tie that to who Dude is. Dude is also, in keeping with the times, gender neutral. And see how long it takes people to guess who this is. Maybe we can look at Dana's Twitter feed for that. Or maybe I'll just sense it from the audience. So Stephen has found the music for the segment because it can only be NPR-type music for such a segment. So would you be so kind as to roll it, sir? Dude loves God, beer, and his electric Mustang. Sure, this cabinet-level secretary has thoughts on the nuts and bolts of Dude's job, but the nuts and bolts occupies just a sliver of his voluminous mind. The curious mind of Dude holds much of its functionality in reserve, even as he discusses the nuts and bolts of his job, down to the pointiest little detail that is his current stock and trade. This cabinet-level secretary comes off like a Mensa black card holder might have a secret go habit, or a three-second Rubik's Cube solution, or a knack of supplying off the top of his head the day of the week for a random date in 1404, along with a non-condescending history of the Julian and Gregorian calendars. As this secretary and I talked in his unfurnished corner office one afternoon in early spring, I slowly became aware that Dude's cabinet job requires only a modest portion of his cognitive powers. Other mental facilities, no kidding, are portions to the Iliad, Puritan historiography, and Kalsgaard's Spring, not, though, in the original Norwegian slacker. Fortunately, he was willing to devote yet another apse in his cathedral mind to making his ideas three mighty themes: neoliberalism, masculinity, and Christianity intelligible to me. Who do you think that is? That describes Mayor Pete. That describes a guy who, in his role as mayor, succeeded in not being fired despite being hated by a good portion of the black community. And as you know, if you are a BIPOC, your opinion holds more weight than anyone else's. Mayor Pete. Now, he may well have all these qualities. He may well be someone who's learned stuff through books. In fact, I'm sure he's a guy who's learned stuff through books. But I'm here to tell you he does not have anything close to an understanding. He might have studied Christianity like one studies animals at a zoo. Gosh, watch this one orangutan. He always goes to this, watch this, or studied it like one reads about, for instance, I've read about being a Navy SEAL a bunch. I can't be one, never could be, never had the strength, the talents, the athleticism, never, couldn't do it. I could read about it. And Mayor Pete's not a Christian. There's nothing Christian about Mayor Pete. So he studies it. But it is this book learning. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the experience required to be the Secretary of Transportation has never existed in this man, nor the interest, and this shows it. You've been made cabinet secretary over the infrastructure of the United States to move products, goods, and people, and your focus is roads are racist plus bicycles. And then there's also this. He is a filthy liar. This is the guy who first day on his job or first week on his job was caught being brought into D.C. in a probably armored up SUV and getting out and getting on his bicycle so he could pretend to ride to work. Is that part of this profile? Which part of the Iliad taught him to do that? Well, actually, the Iliad is replete with people who lie and perform and aren't what they say they are. And so is the world of newsotainment. Caitlin Collins has gotten a big-time, prime-time slot at CNN after the town hall. She's the lady who questioned President Trump during that town hall and, in my judgment, was swept off the floor by President Trump. And she's got this new primetime gig. Now, this is, to me, endemic of D.C. And, in fact, I don't necessarily blame Caitlin Collins. Because Caitlin Collins is a creature of D.C. She used to work for Tucker Carlson. Remember him? He had a show on Fox News. Yeah, I know. I know Tucker's bigger than Fox. I know that. But she used to work for him at the Daily Caller. And Tucker had him on his program. Now, I want to give, as we hear this, this is how she used to think President Trump attacking the press. This is how she used to think of it. And I want to just request that we give her some grace because people can change. But I want to examine this afterwards to see if we think she changed or something else changed. So in this clip, 07. Question. Did Caitlin Collins have a change of her views or a change in who pays her?
What does that do to the reporters covering the briefing every day?
People are a little hysterical about his criticism. Yes, he hates the press. Yes, he's very vocal about it. But what president has not hated the press? We make their lives harder, and they all hate us. They may not all talk about it, but they definitely hate us.
Yes, they do.
So, but people are taking it really personally, and you shouldn't take the president's criticism personally. It shouldn't affect your reporting. But you can tell when you read the New York Times and CNN that it does affect their reporting, and that's not what should happen. I don't take my cues from the president. I report on him. I don't report to him.
So you think that there's a personal element to this? They don't like
definitely
because he criticized
because he calls them out by their names, and they don't like that. And then they get a lot of heat on Twitter, and then it makes them resent him. Not for his policies and not for not following through on his campaign promises, but for who he is as a person. And that's not your job. Your job is not to get your feelings hurt.
The aspect of this that's very, very familiar for someone who's worked in the Beltway is this has happened to Jake Tapper. There was a time, and I don't know if you remember this, where Jake was about as straightforward a reporter as you could get. Incidentally, Jake was also super approachable, nice guy. And I ran into him when he was preparing to do a report outside the Republican National Committee. And he was on the footstep, on the doorstep. And I was walking out and I saw him in his jeans and his nice sport coat. And I just said, and he was setting up so that I was interrupting. I just went up and said, "Hey, Jake, can I say hi?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, hi, nice to meet you." And I said, "Can I tell you something? I've never been able to discern your political opinion. And I just thank you for that. You may be a wild liberal. I don't know." And that's the point is I appreciate that. And he actually, he didn't slap in a, "Hey, pal, you know, I'm very important." He actually put his hand on my shoulder and said, "You know, I'm so glad to hear that you feel that way. I think that's really, really important." Now, did the times change? And Jake Tapper said, "You know, I think this is the way it goes. Is you learn by modeling and you see by modeling, what is it that's going to be rewarded? Well, what has been rewarded at CNN? What's been rewarded at CNN is speaking in these panicked tones about President Trump, speaking in these panicked tones about him being the living and walking, breathing death to democracy. And this is what happens in these media circles. Now, the biggest question for me about these young people is at what point do you look back and say, this is when I turned my first trick? Now, this is a horrible thing, and it's language it's Dana's show, and obviously I want to respect that. I'm also a discipled Christian. I want to be careful about how I use language. But if you're a young person and you are considering a job in big media or a job in politics, I beg you to hear me on this. because of what I've been blessed to do, God's let me work in the center of DC. He's let me work in startups and in venture cap startups and in Microsoft. And I've walked the halls of Hollywood. I've been in the big talent agencies. In other words, I have seen Babylon. I lived in Babylon. Seattle's a form of Babylon. And in seeing this, I came up with this formula I ask you to just think about. One, of course, is faith and measure all things through God's word, etc. And you can know people by their fruits. That's primary. Secondary is this. If you decide to get into politics or big media as a personality, particularly as a personality, write down the things you will never do. Make a list. So how old are you now? 25, 26 years old? Make a list of the things you will never do. And then have them put on plaques. I'm not kidding. Have them put on plaques. So take your five closest friends, maybe your six closest friends, and your mom and dad or your brother, sister, who's ever closest to in your family, your pastor, I hope, give them a copy of this plaque. These are things I will never do. I will never accept a bribe. I will never cheat on my wife. I will never lie to Congress. I will never lie to the American people, even if it's my job to lie to the American people. I will never do it. I will never spin the truth for my boss. Have it engraved and then make a very, very special one for yourself. And on that plaque, put a mirror in the middle. So you've got the pledges of things you won't do. And in the middle, you have a mirror. Place that on the inside of your office door or wherever you will see it before you leave work. Or if you like, put it on the inside door of your apartment. You have to look at this every day. The second you do one of those things, leave. The second your family's seen you do one of those things, beg them to tell you to leave. Because here's what I've learned about DC is the first, and this is the tough vernacular. The first trick you turn is, it's hard. The first time you turn a trick, it's hard. It's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good to be touched that way, to be treated that way. But after a while, you just get in the car and you let the John drive. That's how you end up in this position. I'm not calling Caitlin Collins a prostitute. I don't know her motivation. I don't want to bear false witness. I know the environment. And I know that when selling out happens by degree, when you look back, you don't even really remember the first time you turned the trick unless you put it on a plaque. So I hope you'll consider doing that. We'll come back on The Dana Show. It's Todd Herman filling in. Today, in stupidity, lurks in the near future.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Hey, it has been just an amazing honor to fill in for Dana, and I just want to thank the team, Stephen and Kane, and Dana's affiliate in Spokane, Washington, KSBN AM 1230, for putting up with me and being so kind. Thank you for that. We do have a feature that is called Today in Stupidity. There's no sound for that. Oh, there is. All right, the Miller Lite people are responding now to the fact that Americans do not like to be condescended to. They created this ridiculous S-word campaign where to be a tough woman means that you are also vulgar in your language and dismissive in your attitudes and crude in your speech overall. And you are employed as worm farmers because no one else can be tough. And there is an analysis to this. To me, it's the Madison Avenue types who have to have people in boxes. So they're in the professional women box. And then there are tough political women. But real women, when they're tough, they roll around the S word in their mouth like the rest of us roll around saliva. And they like to say it and be dirty. But no, they don't like to be physically attractive because, well, that's awful. And if they are physically attractive, they would never choose to show their bodies. Miller Lite, their spokeswoman, Iana Glazer, I think that's how I say her name. I'm told a hardcore socialist. Miller Lite says this was a campaign, was a joke, but not in the way they pretend. It's become a joke. Here is that spokeswoman in clip 8 on with Stephen Colbert.
We've been watching all this, you know, fake news and whatever, real news and the president. Anticipating coming here tonight, I have been thinking, Stephen, that you are a really model white man. You're a really...
I am the picture in the dictionary next to white man, I think. They don't get much whiter than me.
You are the good version of one because almost our president is almost like the number one white guy that, you know, in America because he's the president. But I'm also like, also Stephen Colbert is. You've just been revealing yourself to us over the years in the way... I've been watching Strangers with Candy lately. Uh-huh. And you've just been revealing yourself in this sincere way.
Okay, so she's referring to the figurehead. If you have trouble deciding whether to vote for me or the other guy, then you ain't, you know, what's that color? I'm in such trouble. Black! And it's, black kids can be just as smart and clean and as the, what's that other color? White! Well, not orange, white! That's model whiteism. Right. This is not a joke. The joke is inside the halls of Miller Lite and their ad agency, this compartmentalization of people. I am blessed because of where I live to work around some truly tough women, like women who drive truck. And that's a tough job. It's a tough job for anybody. Ask anybody who does long haul trucking. That's tough. You know, they don't cuss. There's a woman down the street from us. We live up in a town of about 600 people. And they're off grid. Well, they live on the other side of the lake. I should be precise. They're off grid. I've met her three times at our local restaurant, our sit-down place, our fancy place where we put on our collared shirts. And sometimes even wear shoes. You know, I've never heard the S word from her. I also am blessed to work around and work out alone a lot of truly elite female athletes, as in the fittest women in the world, for real. Women who weigh 135 pounds but can deadlift 315 for reps of five or snatch 185 pounds above their head. And you know what's funny? In the 3.5 years, 2 hours a week I've been around these women, not only have I never heard them use the S word, I see a varying degree of comfort revealing their bodies. Some women wear sports bras and sports shorts. And those of us in the gym culture learn those are our workout partners, not people to lust after. Some of them do not do that at all. They cover their bodies, even when it's hot. In other words, there's an array of humankind. And ain't it funny? God did not put boxes around us. He said, there's neither Gentile nor Jew, nor servant, nor slave. In his eyes, he loves us all just the same. But not in the eyes of Madison Avenue, because if you ain't in a box, how are they going to do micro-targeting? Got to let them do their micro-targeting. This is Todd Herman. Been an honor to be in for Dana today. DanaLash.com.